Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. David Maskey joins a senior research fellow for the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life based in Washington, D.C. to talk about state ballot initiatives. Earlier I talked with him this afternoon. I began by asking him, do these state ballot initiatives have an effect on the outcome of state and national office elections?
Well, they can. I mean, they can certainly help push one candidate over the line in a particular state. You know, we have the example in the 2004 election of President Bush certainly benefiting at least to some degree from the presence of an amendment to the Ohio state constitution on the ballot in that state that would have banned and that did, since the amendment passed, outlaw same-sex marriage. It's pretty clear from the polling that was done that President Bush benefited both from an outpouring of social conservative voters out to the polls to support that amendment, but also he did quite a bit better in Ohio with African-American voters. And the reason for that was that in many African-American churches, particularly evangelical churches, African-American pastors told voters that this was a big issue and urged them to support the amendment to the Constitution, and in some cases, urged them to vote on issues like this when they voted for the presidency. And of course, President Bush was, you know, even though President Bush and Senator Kerry both opposed same-sex marriage, President Bush had a stronger position against same-sex marriage than Senator Kerry did.
Let's talk about Prop 8 in California, the one that is probably most known nationally.
Right.
What's the initiative and how is it expected to come out?
Well, this initiative is aimed at the May, you know, at a decision by the California Supreme Court that was handed down in May of this year that legalized same-sex marriage. And what Proposition 8 would do would simply say that marriage, as defined in the California state constitution and hence in all of the state laws, is between a man and a woman. So it would, in effect, overturn this decision and pretty much prevent the California Supreme Court from coming back and saying that state laws, it would basically prevent the California Supreme Court from overturning it because, again, it's a constitutional amendment, not a state law. And in the May California Supreme Court decision that I just mentioned, the court looked at a particular state, actually a number of state laws that outlawed same-sex marriage, and they said that the California state constitution, that those laws violated the California state constitution. So now the constitution itself would be changed to outlaw same-sex marriage, which would sort of protect from being overturned by the state Supreme Court. But if you're talking about states where ballot initiatives might have more of an impact on the general election, there's also an amendment outlawing same-sex marriage in Florida. This is Proposition 2 in Florida. In that state, in California, Senator Obama has a substantial lead in the polls. But Florida, of course, the race is much closer. So in a state like Florida, a lot of social conservative voters coming out to support Proposition 2 could potentially help Senator McCain. There's another state where this is also potentially helpful to Senator McCain, and that's in Colorado, which is where there is also a much closer race. In this case, voters are being asked to decide on an amendment to the Colorado state constitution that would define a person as being anyone from the moment of fertilization. So this is an abortion-related, not a same-sex marriage-related amendment to a state constitution. But again, a lot of times these amendments do have the effect of bringing a lot of socially conservative voters to the polls, and this certainly, at least in the past, has at times proved helpful to Republican candidates.
Is there also a parental consent ballot initiative in California?
There is. There's one that would require parental notification before a minor, and a minor is defined as a woman under the age of 18 who is not legally married, before a minor could obtain an abortion. And parents would need to be, or guardian, legal guardian, would need to be notified 48 hours before that abortion could be performed. So it's not a parental consent law. It's a parental notification law. There is, by the way, an exception in this law for emergencies. You know, if a young woman is, say, taken to the hospital, she's pregnant, and doctors determine that she could die or suffer severe bodily injury as a result of her pregnancy, then they can perform an abortion without having to go without having parents or guardians notified.
Where do the polls indicate in the California case, Prop 8 and the parental consent ballot initiative are standing with the voters there?
Proposition 8 is thought to be pretty close. Some polls have shown Proposition 8, which is the same-sex marriage ballot initiative, with a slight lead. Others have shown it support for it trailing, but there's something that we have to know, that when you see a poll that says, let's say, that one of these amendments to the state constitution outlawing same-sex marriage is running a few points behind, that doesn't mean that it's going to lose, because in the past polls have not necessarily accurately judged the amount of support for these. In other words, voters tend to come out in greater numbers than the poll in favor of these initiatives than the polls, at least in the past, have indicated. Now, with regard to Proposition 4, which is the parental notification amendment that we just spoke about a few minutes ago, there it's pretty clear that the polls show it running behind. In other words, voters look like they're going to reject it. And California, by the way, has twice rejected a similar measure. So there's a history here of rejecting a similar parental notification law.
There is a physician-assisted suicide ballot initiative in the state of Washington. What do the polls indicate there?
Here, the polls indicate that the initiative is more likely than not to pass. This law mirrors very closely a law that was approved in Oregon and actually took effect in Oregon. I should say it was approved in Oregon in 1994, but it didn't take effect until 1997, called the Death with Dignity Act. The Washington state law is also called the Death with Dignity Act, and it is very similar. A patient must be mentally competent, must be judged to be mentally competent, and must also be judged to be terminally ill before they can take their own life. Now, doctors in this situation can prescribe drugs that will end a patient's life, but they cannot administer them. The patient must administer the drugs themselves. And there's a real clear difference in this particular initiative that's going to the voters in California, I'm sorry, in Washington state, from an initiative that the voters in Washington state considered over 15 years ago in 1991. In that case, they rejected what would be called a right to die or physician assisted suicide initiative. One of the big differences between the one that they rejected and the one that they're going to vote on tomorrow is that in that one, doctors could prescribe drugs and administer them. So obviously, doctors were very concerned, much more concerned about that one than they are about this one. This one, as I said, is expected to pass. So Washington State would join Oregon as the only other state to have physician-assisted suicide. And let me just also mention that similar initiatives have been defeated in other states: Michigan in 1998, Maine in 2000, and California actually back in the early 90s, back when Washington was voting on its initiative. The one that they rejected.
Finally, then, David, there are ballot initiatives on the subject of abortion in both Colorado and South Dakota.
Right.
How are those expected to fare with the voters in those states, respectively?
Yeah, this is tough. In South Dakota, it's likely that it's going to pass. at least the polls seem to indicate that. As you might remember, 2 years ago, voters in South Dakota rejected a similar initiative, but it was a very close vote, and there was a big difference between the one that they rejected a couple of years ago and the one that they're going to vote on tomorrow, and that is that that initiative 2 years ago only allowed an exception in cases where a mother's life was in danger. This initiative includes this life exception, plus it includes an exception for cases of rape or incest. And so it's thought that probably South Dakota voters, who tend to be pretty opposed to abortion, will probably go ahead and approve this. It's different in Colorado. It's much closer, and I think it's unknown at this point whether this amendment will succeed or not. And this is an amendment that, again, sort of looks at or tries to, is in opposition to abortion, but in a different way, and that is that it would amend the state constitution, as I think I said, to say that a person shall be defined as a human being from the moment of fertilization. Now, that would not de facto outlaw a particular abortion law or anything like that, but it would essentially lead to court challenges of almost any kind of abortion procedure. I think that's at least what many lawyers think. And so it's interesting, what you have going on in Colorado is that quite a few, some pro-life people, including the governor of the state, Governor Ritter, say that they oppose the measure, in part because they fear that it will lead to lots of court challenges, and one of them will filter up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will be forced at that point to either reject or reaffirm Roe v. Wade. And the fear is that there aren't enough votes on the Supreme Court, at least right now, to reject Roe v. Wade. So the fear among pro-life forces is that this will just reaffirm Roe, and in doing that, it'll make it harder for a future Supreme Court to overturn Roe. So there's a kind of interesting sort of irony to what's going on in Colorado, where you have, again, you have some people in the pro-life movement saying, you know, they're not really very comfortable with this amendment.
David Maskey, Senior Research Fellow of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, talking about marriage and life state ballot initiatives. When we come back, we'll talk with Hadley Arkus about Senator Barack Obama and the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. Stay tuned.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Creationists, are they unfit to be doctors? Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible-upholding ministry of Answers in Genesis.
Well, some of our evolutionist opponents do say some rather ugly things about those of us who believe in the biblical account of creation. And for example, a college professor in Texas indicated that creationists are unfit to be medical doctors. Now, his school, Texas Tech University, even supported him. On the school's website, he said he won't give letters of recommendation to any student entering medical school unless they first believe humans evolved from other life forms. You see, he believes that since evolution is the central unifying principle of biology, as he states, someone who rejects evolution can't be a good doctor. You see, this professor says creationists commit malpractice because, quote, good scientists would never throw out data that don't conform to their expectations or beliefs. And yet he later writes about, quote, the fact of human evolution, even if all the details are not yet known, end of quote. My good friend Dr. David Menton of our staff, who taught for more than 30 years at a well-known medical school, has debunked the claim that doctors must believe in evolution. There's no medical discovery that depends on evolution.
Many times we'll get that accusation that there are no real scientists who believe in creation, but we'd like you to hear an interview between Ken Ham and our astronomer Dr. Jason Lyle. For your gift of any size, we'll send you this audio CD after you call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS.